to the Relentless CEO Podcast. With Adam Kiefer. Follow your path to success alongside icons and industry leaders in martial arts, fitness, and more. Let's go. This is the Relentless CEO Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to another amazing episode of the Relentless CEO Podcast. We have an amazing guest for you this week. Her name is Jonna Lee. Jonna was recommended to me by Cameron Harold. I've seen her in action, scaling agencies, scaling businesses. She's an operation and team culture master. And I am so excited for you guys to actually hear from her and hear the information that she has to share with the martial arts industry about how we can become more systemized, create better cultures in our business that's going to help lead us to more profitability. And remember, as always, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow for more. Jonna, so excited to have you on the Relentless CEO Podcast. I know we've been trying to schedule this for a while with all my craziness going on, but I want to thank you for taking the time to be on here.
Absolutely. Here we are. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. And Cameron recommended me to, of course, reach out to you and have you on the podcast. He's like, Jonna is the best operations person. You need to talk to her. And I was like, and I think you and I met a long time ago on a call. Like when I was first starting the agency, I think it was, I remember your operations calls were always the best. So I was like, this worked out perfect. Us coming back together. We have a lot of people that listen to this that are small business owners in the fitness and martial arts space, really great technicians at their skill set. Sometimes struggling on getting the business operations down, and a lot of them are scaling and starting to build their team. And one of the biggest misses I always see is with the hiring and onboarding process of employees. I think it's an afterthought a lot. What are some ways that you would suggest them to approach onboarding correctly so that they can get them involved in the culture and really give them the right expectations right out of the gate?
Fantastic question. And I will start by, before people click away from this being like, oh, I don't need this, here's why it's important, right? Let's start with that. Because I think hiring and onboarding is often treated as like a nice to have, when the reality is hiring or onboarding the wrong person is one of the most expensive mistakes that you can make as a startup entrepreneur. The cost of a mishire on average is 1 to 3 times that person's annual salary. So that's getting the wrong person in the role. Onboarding that person, people who go through a strong onboarding process stay on average 3 times longer in the role. And they have a 72% higher productivity while they're in the role. So I don't think most CEOs I know are super focused on like the client experience, getting the right clients in, getting the right clients onboarded, a strong onboarding process. The reality is that like your team is just the same, except they're way more important, because one strong hire is going to turn around and touch every single client that you work with for the next 3 years. And so it deserves time, it deserves energy and attention, because doing it right is going to massively unlock productivity and growth to the business.
Love that.
And, cool.
And then tactic wise, let's say where would they start if they have nothing built out yet for onboarding? Where would you recommend?
Yeah, totally. So I love that you mentioned like getting people onboarded into the culture, right? I imagine a lot of people in your audience have created their businesses because they're really passionate about the company that they've started. They care about the clients. They care about the work that they do. My biggest invite is to make sure that you are sharing that as explicitly as possible with your new team member, literally on the day that they start. If you look at, there's amazing examples from companies like Zappos or Netflix. They have these things called culture decks. You can reach out to me. You can get our template that we use for Spyglass. But a culture deck is essentially an introduction to the business. It's an introduction to your vision, to your mission, to your products, to your core values. And it's an introduction to the behavioral expectations of what it's going to take for that person to be successful on your team. I see so many founders frustrated by their team not meeting their expectations. And my question is always, well, did you tell them? And that's where it gets a little bit awkward, right? Because I never told them, like, it sounds simple, but like to show up on meetings 3 minutes early, to show up on meetings with your video on, to speak this way to clients, right? If there's ever things that are a part of how you be, how your company wants to show up in the world, it's your responsibility to share that explicitly with those new team members and do it as early in the process as possible so that they can meet your expectations. It's unfair to like harbor all of this resentment for a team that's not meeting expectations that you've never told them about.
Now, let's go the opposite side, because I know some people are listening to this like, crap, I didn't onboard anyone on my team. Well, and now I have this team. Do I need to go back and do it? How do we get them?
Yeah.
Like the expectations that they should have had since the beginning.
We help our clients do culture resets all the time. I actually just, Adam, got off a call with a client today, and he was saying within a week of doing the culture reset, he has seen a night and day difference with his team. They're not coming to him as much. They're way more trusting of each other. Like, you can create really dramatic change when you tackle it head on. So our culture reset script is like essentially an explicit acknowledgement that the culture is not where you wanted it to be. It's taking ownership as a CEO and founder for that fact. And it's resetting expectations as explicitly as possible that says, this is how we are going to grow, and this is how we're going to show up moving forward. Are you with me? Right? And you get to turn it into a bit of a rallying cry, because the reality is that everyone wants it to be a part of the dream team. Everybody, at least in theory, wants to level up. Everybody wants the growth and the opportunity. And so if you can turn something that is probably right now very frustrating, very negative, it's causing you a lot of pain, and you can turn that into a rallying point for your entire team to make this dramatic evolution with you, the reality is it's never too late. You can always layer that in, knowing that not everybody is going to ultimately make the jump, but that's okay, because those were people who probably shouldn't have been on the bus to begin with.
Love that. And the culture deck, I think, is such a great idea. That's genius. I'm going to steal that and look into it and build it for us. That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that's such a cool thing to do. And then continuing on the culture and making sure that you don't have to continuously do culture resets. What are some things that you recommend to ensure that, hey, this is something that's honored for a long period of time and not having to be retooled constantly?
Totally. I always say culture is not what you say. Culture is what you do, right? So the culture deck is important because you're telling them these are the core values. But what really matters is how they then see you and the rest of the team show up and either embody those core values or not. So to give you a tactical example, if you say that your core values is radical honesty, but then they see you lie to a client, they're going to lie to a client, and you might get frustrated about that and be like, but it's radical honesty. The reality is that they're going to look to your actions way more than they look to your words. And so making sure that, first off, your core values as a CEO are truly core, right? These are the things that you will show up and represent and embody even on your worst day, because that's where you're setting and leading by example for your team to follow and do the same. Making sure that you believe so deeply in these core values that you hire by these core values, that you fire according to these core values, and that you bring them up on a regular basis. So you asked about how do we make sure that core value kind of continues. A tactical example is that every single week on my team huddle, I ask my team for what we call spyglassing moments. How did you show up and embody the spyglass mission and vision, or how did you embody the core values? And we take 15 minutes every single week to share individually. Here's how I played like a nerd. Here's how I competed with my own potential. They're using the language of the core values. And then if you're really good, what you hear is that outside of those meetings, people will start to use those core values. They'll start to use the language because it's sunk into their subconscious. And now that's just how they think.
I love that. Yeah, we do something similar where at the start of the meeting, everyone will recognize one other person that they saw exemplifying core values. And then we do like a monthly raffle at the end for the person that did the best job. But I love what you did as well, because I think it's good to have them reflect on their own actions hey, how did I show up or how didn't I show up? That's great.
Totally. And I think it all comes down to what you as a manager reward or disincentivize, right? Yeah. I will call someone out of the blue on Slack if they embody the core values. I will actively disincentivize. I will call someone out just as hard if they miss on the core values, and I'll turn it into a teachable and learning moment, right? So we are what we do. We are what we reward. Make sure that your actions are in alignment with the core values that you want to see.
Now, question for you, because I see a lot of the people that we coach and just people that we coach over time, very good implementing at the beginning and then falls off over time because they're entrepreneurs. They just get caught up in other stuff. So with things like being able to keep top of mind to recognize people for those strong core values, any systems that you feel like are needed to assist people in actually being consistent with that?
Yeah, I think if it's something that you're wrestling with, systems is the perfect word for it, right? You can build accountability and reminders into your day-to-day. So having the agenda in the team huddle where 15 minutes is always carved out for team wins. Having, I know many people do like a gratitude journal. Okay, well, how can you have one of those items always be about somebody on your team? And then how can you copy and paste that into a Slack appreciation message, right? So you can set little reminders throughout your day-to-day habits that are outward facing, that are team facing, and you can remind yourself, because the reality is you're probably thinking nice things about your team all the time, right? Like, oh man, that person did something amazing. We're just not taking the time to tell them that. And so every time something goes well, every time something goes wrong, it's an opportunity for you to double down on your culture. If something goes wrong, how is that a misalignment with our core values? And how can we learn from it? And how can we double down next time, right? If something goes right, how can we reward it? So if you're processing the day-to-day of your business as that, it's data and it's an opportunity, then it becomes way easier. Like then you're overwhelmed with all the various times over the course of the day that you could call someone out for their core value embodiment.
I love that. And I think my experience with the business owners we work with, they do a much better job at the praising the core values. Yeah. But then when it comes time to have the hard conversation, when someone goes against it, that's totally where I think they either just are not confident because they haven't had enough hard conversations to be confident in it, they just maybe haven't had good outcomes in the past. So when you have to address a team member that's going against those core values, what are some of the ways you found that are the best to approach that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we take it super seriously because again, your team is watching your actions. So it's all well and good when everything is well and good to say these are our core values. But if somebody breaks that or breaks with that, how you respond is going to teach your team, okay, are these actually our core values? When push comes to shove, do they actually matter? Does our CEO actually stand by them or not? And if you don't have a really active response to it, what you're showing your team with your actions is that these core values are breakable, right? They're nice to have. They're not deal breakers. It's all right. We can be lenient. And then you lose the whole power of the core values and you're working so hard to put them in place to begin with. So I would recommend, first off, if it's some sort of like kind of reprimand situation, always handling that in private. Nobody likes public shame. But once you've taken care of that in private and you're back on track with that person, get their permission to share the story with the team. If they're okay with it, and if there's a less sensitive way of telling that story, how many bad stories are in the Bible? So many. We learn through storytelling. We learn through other people's mistakes. So if you can share that narrative as a teachable moment for the rest of the team, here's how this person made a mistake, learned from it, is going to do differently next time. And that's what we're all about. Then you actually double whammy it, where that person gets the culture reset, but so does the rest of the team because they see that you're taking it really seriously.
Love that. Now, in your opinion, what are some common mistakes you see when it comes to the culture side of things with different business owners you've worked with?
Yeah, great question. I would say the first is that they set core values arbitrarily. They set core values that some other company has. They set core values that sound nice, right? As opposed to, no, genuinely, who are you as a human being and what are your core values? Because you are the mascot. You are the cultural mascot for your business. How you show up and how you be is the culture. So making sure that you have core values that are in genuine alignment with yourself. And then I think it's what you just talked about, Adam, which is being willing to deal with the flip side of that, which is if somebody's not embodying the core values, if they're not a culture fit, you have to be willing to let them go. I don't care if this is the highest performer across the entire team. They're bringing in the most amount of money. All the statistics show the arrogant jerk is actually going to pull down the overall performance of the team more than they're going to generate growth. And it is, again, it is the most powerful statement you can give to the rest of the team to kick out the highest performer that nobody likes, because they're not a culture fit. That is really where you're demonstrating to your team, this stuff matters. We live, we die by this. And you will get so much more response, so much more growth, so much more buy-in from everyone else as a result.
Yeah, sometimes you got to bench the star player if their attitude isn't there. So I 100% agree with that. And then on the flip side of that, I've made this mistake. I'm sure a lot of people listening have made this mistake. You keep someone too long that you know you should have fired sooner. And then I often find that when you do that, there often needs to be a cultural reset afterwards because the toxicity just sort of lingered from that person.
Yes. And again, if we're bringing this back to just cost to the business or growth to the business, how much opportunity cost is represented by keeping that top, that high performer in, slowly toxifying the well. And now you have to spend 3 months detoxifying it. All of that is wasted time and energy. All of that is cost and investment that could have been avoided by just having the difficult conversation. And the reality is that, and I had to learn this one because, you know, nobody wants to fire people, but I definitely didn't want to fire people. And I had to reframe it for myself in a way that said, look, if this person's not the right fit for this business, then it's actually an act of disservice to them to keep them here. They won't be successful here. They won't find their people here. And there's another company somewhere out there that is the right fit for them. And so I'm actually being selfish if I postpone this conversation. I'm allowing my own emotional discomfort get in the way of what's actually best for them, let alone what is best for this business. And when I was really able to like believe that and do it enough times to see how thankful people ultimately are from parting ways when it's not the right fit, then it became a way easier conversation for me, to the point that now I don't hesitate, because I know it's going to cost the business money and it's going to cost them time.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think on the team side too, one of the things that sort of happens a lot in our industry is what you're talking about earlier with like that, getting rid of the rock star with the bad attitude. Because yeah, some of these school owners or fitness centers will have this like polarizing, like charismatic main instructor that when they're on the floor, they are on, everyone loves them. But then as soon as they're off the floor, they can't get them to do any other task or any other responsibilities. Because they just sort of like having that spotlight. So it's interesting to sort of see how that's been working. When it comes time to talking to employees that aren't hitting metrics or being a culture fit, are you recommending that they document those conversations?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Usually write ups, or what's the best way to go about that in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to any established business owner, I'm sure you would agree, ex-employees are the single greatest source of liability for a business. Yes. And so the way you protect yourself against that is by documenting the process at every single step of the process. Our hope is when we're starting the process, we don't actually end up firing them, right? Mm-hmm. We're having a performance adjustment conversation. I call it a PEP, a personal elevation plan. And my goal is to help you identify the gap, take ownership for the gap, and then co-create a game plan to help you close the gap, right? I'm always stepping into that conversation with the hope that we're going to figure this out. This is a little blip, and then we're going to be hunky-dory 3 months from now. And just in case that doesn't happen, I'm going to record this call. We're going to have a write-up. We're going to agree to that write-up. Like, I will share it with them, co-create it with them. We have the call recorded. If there's an accountability plan in place, we're recording those calls so that if it ever does come to the point where you have to let this person go, you are protected and you're well documented through that process.
And even in person, you recommend just like record it on their phone or something?
Yeah, I think that would totally work. Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's really just a liability. It's a risk management, and it's a little bit awkward, but it's also by far the best thing to do to protect the business.
Yeah, I agree. Especially, I was sharing with you a little bit of what's been going on with us. Yeah. I was like, if I had done like the recording part, it would be a totally different issue at this point.
People get mad. That's the thing. It's a highly unstable moment in time to fire somebody. Emotions run really high. People get really angry, really defensive. Sure. The goal is that if you've done this process correctly from the beginning, that short of some major core value violation or unethical behavior or something like that, they've seen this coming, right? Yep. Because you've had however many conversations with them already, letting them know that there is a gap, trying to co-create a solution to help them close the gap. If they haven't closed the gap, they know that just as well as you do. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
Love that. Next thing I want to talk to you about, because I know you're very operations minded. A lot of the school owners and fitness studio owners have a manager that they work directly with. That's sort of like their operations person, where the entrepreneur or CEO is more the vision strategy person.
Yep.
What is your best advice for operations and the visionary being able to see eye to eye, get along, and be on the same page?
Such a good question, because this is literally all we do all day, every day, right? Like, our clients are the CEOs, but we're coaching their operators. Mm-hmm. And half of that job is what we call power couple coaching. Like, you guys are a power couple. When you're working well together, it's amazing, but you're also two very strong personalities and you're two very different skill sets. Alex Hormozi once told me, like, the visionary and the operator are the gas pedal and the brake pedal of a car. You need both to drive the car safely. If this car is careening down the highway and it's all gas all the time, the car is going to shake apart. Sure. And that's what you see in businesses that are just visionary energy. They're not slowing down for anything. They're not processing out anything. There's no foundation and the business collapses. The operator naturally is the brake pedal. They want to slow things down so we can fix things. We can make them better. We can optimize them. We can integrate them, right? I would love to just, like, I had an operator ask me this week, like, is it appropriate if I just try and pause the company so that I can do some of this work? I was like, no, that's not appropriate. But you can slow it down a little bit, sure, just enough for you to keep pace with it and make sure the wheels don't come off. So there's an intrinsic tension between the gas pedal and the brake pedal. And I think a lot of visionary operator pairs are made uncomfortable by that tension because they think it means something's wrong. Quite the opposite. You need both to drive the car safely. The key is, do you have respect for the other person's energy? Do you recognize that they're bringing that energy to the table ultimately to serve the business at its highest? And can you respect the expertise and the needs that they have so that ultimately in the compromise of that tension, the wheels stay on the car while it moves as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely love that. And one thing, do you recommend having them do like a weekly meeting where they get out of the office together? Or like one of the things that I found with our COO is some of our most productive conversations is when we just go grab lunch and a glass of wine and just like talk there. When we're in the office, there's always things coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially if you find yourself getting really dragged into the nitty gritty of the day to day, and you need to just connect with that person on a strategic level, a change of scene can be absolutely huge. Go for a walk, go for a hike, go to lunch, whatever works for you guys in a remote setting. Like, I've got a leadership intensive coming up. I'm putting a budget aside for everybody in all the places in the world that we are to change their location. Go to a coffee shop, go to a co-working space, just switch it up so that you can be in a different stage of mind when we're having this conversation. So absolutely, absolutely, you should be talking to your second in command at least on a weekly basis, one-to-one, and then you're going to be talking to them through other meetings and that kind of thing. And you want to make sure that more than anything, you guys are aligned. You're aligned on what the priorities for the week are. You're aligned on what challenges are standing in each other's way. You're aligned on what that person needs from you and how you need to show up differently to the relationship because something you're doing is pissing them off, right? To have an opportunity to have that conversation consistently allows for the relationship to get stronger and stronger and stronger. Not having that conversation consistently starts to seed resentment and tension and misalignment and all of the things that can ultimately erode trust, respect, and the foundation of the relationship.
Yeah, I absolutely love how you described that. When we had Cameron on, we were talking to him about something similar. He's like, you and your number two, you guys are a couple. Like, you're treated like a marriage in a sense. Like, if you're not communicating, there's going to be problems arising and all that. And it's funny, one of my private coaching clients, I was talking to him and his number two, and they're just not getting along. They're not communicating. And I was like, you guys might actually want to go to like counseling together. Like, honestly, where they just teach you guys how to communicate together the right way and the right styles.
But I've absolutely done that for clients because it's what's needed, right? This relationship, like a family, this relationship is the core of everything. If it's strong, the family is strong. If it breaks apart, the family could literally break apart. I've seen partnerships dissolve between visionaries and operators in a way that literally cost the business. The business did not survive it. So treating that relationship seriously. And one thing I see a lot, Adam, is like, because their second in command is so trusted, so there, they deprioritize them. Okay, if I'm going to miss any meeting this week, I'm going to miss the meeting with my second in command because they're solid and they've got it. And it's quite the opposite, right? It's like prioritizing a date night when you're parents. It's actually the foundation from which everything else can flow.
Agreed. And one thing I want to ask you about, since you're so great at operations and systems, how often do you encourage people to spot check their systems and going? Because one of the things I sort of see is a set it and forget it mentality where they like install the system and then all of a sudden things break like 6 months down the road and they're like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think this is true for literally every part of the business, but what got you here will not get you there, right? Your systems are the living skeleton of your business. As your business grows, the skeleton needs to grow. It needs to evolve. What I would say is that it's not the CEO's job to be keeping an eye on that. It is the operator, that second in command's, their unique lens, their unique gift to say, hey, here's what's coming down the track for the business. Here's how much we want to grow. Okay, well, this, this, and this are going to break unless I make some adjustments, right? And so your operator at their highest is actually proactively evolving things. They're not waiting for things to break and then fixing them. They're proactively seeing what's coming down the track, and they're shoring up team, systems, whatever is needed to handle the growth right before it hits.
Perfect. And do you recommend like a certain cadence for that? Is that something they should be doing daily, weekly, quarterly?
The reality is that an operator serving at their highest is spending hours every single week working on the business and not just in it. Yep. Same as the CEO, right? They have a high level strategic lens, and it's their responsibility to be working on the business, looking at it top down, seeing where things could be better, seeing what's coming down the track, making dramatic changes before they cost the business money. And if your operator is buried in the weeds of the company, they're just running around reacting to things, I can promise you are getting a fraction of the value out of that person. 100%. Because they don't have time to do the strategic thinking, which is really where they could start making your business some money.
Yeah, I love that. And I think one of the things that is stopping a lot of CEOs from being more successful is that they're doing all the thinking for the team and not empowering their team to actually think for themselves. And yep. I also think that the team wants to contribute in that way. They want to come up with ideas and really give their feedback to the company. And I think it's so valuable because their perspective is so different from the CEO.
100%. Yeah. And I would say that's more true than anything with your operator. Like when I first became COO and I stepped into that very first business, I felt like I was walking down the boulevard of Las Vegas. It was just neon signs everywhere saying, fix this, that's broken, that's bad, that could be better. And when my CEO was looking at the same exact business, he's like, what are you talking about? Everything's fine, right? Your operator has a fundamentally different lens of the company. They're seeing problems. They're seeing opportunities to correct those problems. You're seeing opportunities to grow and like create amazing growth, but create amazing new problems for your operator to then step in and see and solve, right? It's this beautiful dance, but you have to let the operator do their work just in the way that your operator's job is to free up your time so that you can also do your highest value work for the business.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about too, when it comes to just sort of team dynamics and that side of things, we're seeing a younger generation coming up, and in the martial arts industry, a lot of their employees are like 16, 17, 18 years old that are like assistants and stuff. And the feedback I hear a lot is, man, these guys just don't care about goals. They don't care about hitting sales numbers or anything like that. And they're not motivated by money. Like, what do I do, Adam? So, and I'm sure you probably experienced this as well with like some of the younger generation. I would love to hear your take on this. I'll let you run away with it.
Yeah, I think this has always been true, but it is now more true than ever in younger generations, where the reality is money was never actually it. Like if you try and put more money in front of somebody, if you double their salary, they're not going to double their output, right? It's not a one-to-one relationship. Versus if anybody's interested in this topic or really struggling with this, the book I would recommend is called Drive by Daniel Pink. And he draws a distinction between extrinsic motivators and intrinsic motivators. Extrinsic motivators are things like job title, pay, carrots and sticks, right? These are things you put around your team to either push them towards something or to have them run away from some negative consequence. Versus intrinsic motivators are what pulls somebody forward. Why does your person show up and give 120% versus 80%? It's not because you pay them more. It's because they want to. They want to show up and give you their best. They want to bring the most ideas to the table. They want to work hard. How do you make somebody want to give you their best? That's intrinsic motivation. And he draws three essentially core pillars of intrinsic motivation. It's autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And so what I train my operators on is how do we build at a systematic level into like the fabric of the business, systems and processes that support autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Because here's the thing, you're going to be paying the same amount of labor anyway. You're paying for the same amount of people. The question is, are you getting 2x the output or 1x the output? It's going to cost you the same amount. And it's totally free to get 2x the output. I would take that deal any day. You just have to know how to build that into your leadership and into your team.
Love that. And while you're talking about pay, hiring, how do you usually dictate what to start someone at salary-wise?
Yeah. That's so, I mean, obviously it's super dependent on the role. Sure. I think there's a lot of amazing tools out there. You can use things like Glassdoor. You can, if you're in communities like Adam's, you're able to tap on other people who have already hired that person and try to get a sense of the market. But what, you know, we're talking about intrinsic motivators for this new generation, that second core pillar mastery, that's about growth, right? People want to get better. People sure. want to do a good job. People want to feel like they're excelling at something. And so my number one best practice with compensation is give somebody room for growth, right? You don't have to pay them the moon and the stars from day one. You just have to give them the roadmap to get there. And that's what's going to unlock that maximum motivation, because now they have something to chase after.
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think that's what's missing for most businesses, is they don't have the roadmap. Just yeah. like people feel like yep. there's a glass ceiling above them because they're never future casting to their team.
And this generation, where it is so easy for them to leave. That's the thing. These new generations, they just don't need us. They could start an Etsy store. They could start a YouTube channel. They could go online and work for any business across the entire world. And so I think businesses were kind of lazy. They were counting on people to just stay for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. That's not the world we live in anymore. Sure. Business owners have to earn the right to the best talent, and they have to earn the right to keep them. And so pouring investment into not paying them more, but creating a roadmap for growth that keeps them in, like, bought in and engaged and excited to grow long-term, that is a worthwhile investment of your time as a CEO. Because the alternative to that is that that person's going to quit, and then the next person after that, and then the next person after that. And it's going to cost you 1 to 3x their annual salary every time they leave.
Yeah, that's no good.
No good. We avoid that.
Now, on the operations system sides again, I'm just curious, what is the way that you usually recommend to organize all of the systems and operations so they're easily accessible and easy to find for your team?
Yeah. So you got like 6 months to talk about this?
Or what's yes.
No. Okay. So number one system, this is the system I coach my operators to focus on more than any other. I call it the single source of truth. The single source of truth is exactly what it sounds like. It is the one hub, the centralized location where your entire team can come, get the information that they need to do their work, and then go back and do their work. So much of the inefficiencies that I see in businesses is a team that's bogged down by just trying to figure out what the hell is going on, right? If your team is saying anything along the lines of, like, where are we at? What's happening? What happened there? Catch me up. If people are out of the loop and they're just trying to, like, figure out what balls are in the air, all of that is wasted time and energy. Like, that doesn't need to happen. That's totally unnecessary. And it's preventing your team from actually doing the job that you hired for, the job that's going to drive growth into the business. So you're not only, like, paying money for them to waste their time doing these things, you're losing money because they're not spending that time actually returning on your investment. And so the single source of truth is where you're housing client information, meeting agendas, major projects that are being worked on, SOPs, tasks, anything that is required for that day-to-day business machine to run, it should be housed in a single place so that instead of bothering anybody else, all of that information is just one click away from whatever your team needs in that moment.
So would you encourage, if they could have their CRM house all of the trainings as well, would that be ideal?
You mean internal trainings for, like, team trainings and that kind of thing? Yep. That can absolutely work. Yeah, I think even, let's say, SOPs, you're like, oh, but Jonna, the SOP has to be in a Google Doc. Okay, beautiful. Then just have a link to the Google Doc in the single source of truth, right?
It's still
one click away, but it's all being brought into a central location so that your teammate isn't having to, like, scroll through pages and pages of Google Docs.
Exactly.
Okay. Like, if your team has more than 3 tabs open to get their job done, you're doing something wrong.
I love that. Don't look at my tabs on my computer.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd be embarrassed. Love that, though. I think that's great. I think getting it all in one spot is huge. I know a lot of people still like paper operations books, which is hard as hell to update. I've also heard operation people, some people love checklists, some people hate checklists for systems. What is your view on checklists for your teams?
I think that, like anything else, SOPs, checklists, systems, processes, hiring, these are all just tools in the tool belt. There's a time and place to use the tool. But that's like you asking me, Adam, like, all right, you're a carpenter, you know hammers. What do you think of hammers? I'm like, yeah, they're awesome, but only when you need a hammer. Yep. You don't have to hammer everything to build a house. And so I see a lot of operators being like, I'm operations, I'm an SOP that, I'm a checklist that, I'm a systemize that. And especially in a startup environment, shit's just moving too fast. Yeah. Like you would waste time building out this SOP because it's only going to change 3 months from now. And so I put a lot of focus into helping my operators rewrite their own beliefs around what a good job looks like, because a good job in startup land is not perfection. It's the good enough. Sure. It is the good enough, functional, minimum viable, because we know that that's only going to change again. And any second spent perfecting this is a second wasted, because nobody needs the perfect version of this. Not yet. Focus on the next thing that's probably already broken and you need to go clean that up.
Yep. I love that startup mode is good enough. Like,
yes,
that is so darn true. Now, question for you, how do you get people to go from startup good enough to, we're going on all cylinders. We got to improve the level of quality now.
Yeah. I hear my clients always describe it as like, it feels like our business is growing up. Like we were just a little kid kind of bobbing around in the box. And now it feels like we have to put on our big kids. Flows, right? And this is where we get into things like formal processes and proper documentation and all of these sorts of things. I think, again, the invite to the CEOs listening to this is that it's not your job. You're not responsible for putting that more structured approach to business in place. You are responsible for listening to the advice that your operator brings you, right? So the biggest area that I see this happen is in decision-making. When a CEO is young and small, they can just make whatever decisions they want. And like 2 hours later, they're executed because it's just me and no one can tell me I can't. And so they keep trying to lead that way once they build a team. Like, oh, I want to jump over here. What if we try this? Yes, I can do that. Yes, let's try it. And what they don't realize is that they're starting to introduce whiplash into their company, where their team is now just like running after them, trying to execute all these crazy ideas. And the result is like a boat that's trying to be rowed really hard in 10 directions. That boat's not going anywhere, right? Yep. And so CEOs are like, but I'm trying so many things. Why isn't it working? Everyone's working so hard. Why aren't we growing? And the reality is that you've split your energy across too many different things and you've lost momentum and clarity. So an operator in that case could come in and put meetings in place so that your ideas get stress tested and only the best ones filter into the business. They could put some constraints around priorities and goals and how many priorities and goals we get to have at any given point in time, right? These are the things that help a company grow up. Right. And CEOs naturally are very resistant to that because they're like, what are you doing? Just let me fly, right?
Yep.
And so that's where I think a CEO does have responsibility, is in adhering to the processes and then the systems that are ultimately put in place for the good of the business.
That was part of my growing up process, honestly. Like I was so, we'll never be corporate yes. until like everyone just does whatever the hell they want. And then you're like, wait, we need rules. So like, let's bring those back in. We're going corporate.
Exactly. And it's not a bad thing. I think you can keep all of the amazing essence of what makes a startup, and you can scale with that. You can scale innovation and creativity and horizontal leadership and all of these things, but you can't scale chaos, right? Sure. And there's a line to draw there, and your operator should be responsible for wrangling the chaos so that ultimately you're not wasting your time getting pulled into the mess that you've created when your time should be spent generating the next amazing idea or forming the next huge partnership.
Love that. Now I want to talk to you about employee overwhelm, because I also see this too. And I think for a lot of companies, it's maybe going into the startup phase where they're just like, we're going on all cylinders. There's no time to like pause or slow down, like just get it done. And then everyone ends up staying later and later and later. And it gets crazy. I know that the opposite struggle for the CEO or the business owner is, well, hiring more people costs more money also. So how do we get the best of both worlds, which isn't always possible, but yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I think this is where operations can start saving you a lot of money. Because when teams tell me they're overwhelmed, my immediate reaction thought, until proven otherwise, is you're disorganized. Like, yeah, you're overwhelmed. You're feeling overwhelmed, but it's not because you have too much work to do. It's because you're not set up for success in your role. And you could have no problem getting the amount of work done that you need to, if you were set up for success and you had a stable and organized foundation from which to work. So to give you a tactical example of this, Adam, my very first COO role was for a digital marketing agency. And the average account manager at your average marketing agency can handle between like 30 to 40 client accounts. Right. My account managers were handling between 80 to 100.
Holy crap.
So we literally 3x'd the productivity of the team, not by hiring more people, but by putting the right automations and systems around them so that they didn't have to do anything else other than their job. They didn't have to track down information. They didn't have to attend unnecessary meetings. They didn't have to waste their time and their energy throughout the day handling chaos because there wasn't any chaos. Sure. So what's there left to do? Pick up the phone, call a damn client and upsell them, right? And so if your team right now is coming to you and saying, hey, we're really overwhelmed, you feel like you're stuck in this hamster wheel because if you bring more people on, that only magnifies and compounds the chaos. It only like makes the problem worse and it only puts more on your plate. The solution there isn't to hire more bodies. It's to make each of those bodies as successful and productive as possible so that they can handle more work, but do it with less overwhelm. They're just more efficient.
Love that. And curious too, what are some companies that you tend to look at as like, man, they have the right culture or this company has the right operations and systems? I learned really good from watching other people do what they do. So that of course will even help me to implement some things in my business.
Yeah, absolutely. I would, in terms of like world-class cultures where we also have a lot of visibility into them, Zappos is an incredible example. And their former CEO, Tony Hsieh, wrote a book called Delivering Happiness. And they have like a culture book. Like you could really study Zappos. That's an amazing example. I think Virgin, I just had the opportunity to meet Richard Branson last week on his island. So like I'm team Virgin right now. But in terms of brand embodiment, core values, culture, like you really want a group of people that embodies an ethos, study Virgin. I think Alex and Leila Hormozi are probably the top that I know when it comes to just pure high performance team management. Like they are savages. And there's a lot to be learned from how they run and manage their culture and their team as a result.
Yeah, I love that. Zappos was like pretty much how I learned about culture. Back in the day, they actually had a business training program where one of their trainers would teach you how they onboard people, their culture and all that stuff.
Very cool.
And yeah, that was like one of the first courses I ever did, which I thought was amazing. And then I always like to ask guests books that you recommend. I know you already recommend Drive.
I've dropped a few.
If you want to drop one, maybe for culture and one for operations.
Yep. My number one book for culture is called The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. He analyzes the world's highest performing cultures from like jewelry art thieves and like crazy groups of people that you'd never expect. It's amazing. And then in terms of leadership, high performance leadership, like we were just talking about, Multipliers by Liz Wiseman is absolutely changed my thinking around my own leadership and really helped me level up as a leader. Operations, I genuinely wish I had something to tell you. I think you will find any operator is having to piecemeal together their education because there's not a Bible for operations. Maybe I will write one day, but for now I have a coaching program and you can always come talk to me about that.
I love that. So if people want to find out about your coaching program or just follow you and get more information, where's the best way to go for that?
Yeah, best place to get in touch with me, guys, is on my social. That's also where I am dropping weekly free value operations coaching and education for startups. So I'm on Instagram and Facebook as The Jonna Lee. And then you can DM me and that's the best place to get in touch.
Yeah, and for all you guys listening, like Jonna had some of the most valuable calls that I was ever on when I was part of the agency mastermind that used to work in. And it's funny because I don't want to mention like some of the other calls I was not getting value from, but every time I jumped on your call, I like would leave with like pages of notes and I'm like, I suck at operations. I'm like, I need to get this better. So her knowledge is amazing. So if you guys have a chance to follow her and be coached by her, I don't think you could find a better person to coach you on operations. So please take advantage of that for all you guys listening. Jonna, any upcoming events you're speaking at or anything?
I am dialing in Q2 right now. So there's nothing final and on the schedule just yet. If you go to my YouTube channel though, I think it's The Jonna Lee as well. You can see the replays from speaking events that I did here in Q1. I joined Agency Founders in Atlanta. I ran a workshop on org chart restructuring for another mastermind. So all of my best stuff you can find on YouTube.
That's awesome. So I know you're highly busy person. You're kicking ass on a daily basis. So I'm so appreciative of you taking the time to jump on the podcast, and hoping you get a lot more people following you as a result. But thank you again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This was so fun.
Of course.
We're unstoppable. To the top, we about to go. That CEO, I need to know the impact we about to grow. Competition comical. Straight A1, we on the road. Money focused for the goal. Tell them what they need to know.
We unstoppable.